Imagine lying in bed, right? The room is this perfectly peaceful, sleep-inducing 28 decibels. You're just drifting off.
Sounds pretty ideal.
It is.
Yeah.
But then next door, your neighbor turns on their shower, and instantly this water pipe that's buried inside the brick wall just inches from your head starts screaming at 48 decibels.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is a massive jump.
Right. It's the acoustic equivalent of someone dragging a rattling refrigerator into your bedroom at 2 in the morning. And it happens every single night.
Which completely shatters any expectation of your home being a sanctuary. I mean, when you live in a shared building, your personal peace is fundamentally tied to the structural integrity of the walls around you.
Exactly.
Because if that infrastructure starts vibrating or echoing or just generally failing, it doesn't just stay in the walls. It invades your space and literally takes over your life.
Yeah, living in an apartment building is honestly like living inside a giant shared organism. Everyone has their own little cell, sure, but you are all sharing the exact same bones, the same nervous system, the same arteries.
That's a really good way to look at it.
Thanks. So for this deep dive, we're looking at what happens when one of those shared arteries, in this case, the plumbing starts torturing a resident. And wild spoiler here, the building's management just shrugs and refuses to fix it.
Unbelievable.
We are exploring this really fascinating real-world legal decision from the Civil and Administrative Tribunal of New South Wales. The case is Hermes v. The Owners, Strata Plan number 51923.
And, what makes this case so vital for anyone listening who lives in high-density housing is that it isn't just some story about petty neighbors bickering over loud music.
Right. It's not about a loud TV.
Exactly. It's actually a masterclass in the absolute uncompromising legal obligations a building has to its residents. We're going to look at the anatomy of an infrastructure failure and how a resident used hard science to prove his peace was being stolen.
Plus the surprisingly strict legal duties that govern the buildings we call home. So we have to introduce the man at the center of this whole saga, Dimitri Haremus.
Right, Denise.
He owns Unit 40 in this massive residential complex sitting right above the Rockdale Plaza Shopping Center. And we should clarify, Dimitri is not some chronic complainer who just moved in and decided he hates city noise.
No, not at all. He has owned and lived in that specific unit for 20 years.
2 decades.
Yeah, and for the vast majority of those 2 decades, everything was totally fine. The timeline here is critical, actually, because it establishes a baseline of normalcy.
Right, like it wasn't always this bad.
Exactly. After years of quiet, this intolerable noise suddenly started radiating from the shared party wall. That's the wall separating Dimitri's bedroom from the bathroom of the adjoining apartment, which is Unit 41.
And the trigger for this entire nightmare was a change in who lived in Unit 41. Basically, a night shift worker moved in.
Which naturally means the peak hours of operation for that neighboring bathroom completely inverted.
Yeah, this person is coming home from work and showering late at night, or in the incredibly early hours of the morning, which is, exactly when Dimitri is trying to get his core hours of sleep.
But we really need to look at the physics of why a shower becomes a nightmare in this situation. This building is a full brick and concrete construction.
Solid stuff.
Very solid. And the plumbing for Unit 41's bathroom is embedded entirely inside the brick party wall, right behind the tiles. So Dimitri's head is resting on his pillow, literally inches away from this internal plumbing.
Okay, so when the water turns on, what actually happens inside that wall?
Well, when water rushes through older pipes, especially if the pressure is high or the internal acoustic isolation brackets have degraded, it creates kinetic energy. It vibrates.
Okay, makes sense.
And because those pipes are encased within a rigid brick wall, that kinetic energy has nowhere to dissipate. The rigid brick absorbs the vibration and essentially turns the entire party wall into a giant speaker cone.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and it's projecting all that noise directly into Dimitri's bedroom.
So Dimitri naturally goes to the owner's corporation, the building management, and tells them his wall is screaming and he literally cannot sleep.
And their initial response is completely wild.
It really is. First, they try changing some tapware in Unit 41, which does absolutely nothing to stop the pipes deep inside the wall from vibrating.
Right, treating the symptom, not the cause.
Exactly. Then, incredibly, they try to persuade the night shift worker to just use their own bathroom less frequently during those hours.
Which is just, I mean, telling a resident they aren't allowed to bathe in their own home after a long night shift is an entirely unfair and unworkable solution.
It's absurd.
It really is. It attempts to manage a physical infrastructure problem by policing human behavior.
I hear that, but Let's play devil's advocate for a second here, because if you, the listener, choose to buy an apartment in a massive, high-density block directly above a busy shopping center, shouldn't you expect a certain level of environmental noise?
That's a common argument, sure.
Like, isn't hearing your neighbor flush a toilet or run a shower just the basic price of admission for city living?
And that is the exact defense the Owners Corporation tried to lean on early in the dispute. They really wanted to frame this as a simple nuisance issue, you know?
Right, like it's just a subjective annoyance.
Exactly. Something that Dimitri just needed to learn to live with. But the evidence clearly showed the neighbor wasn't stomping around or doing anything malicious. They were taking a perfectly normal shower.
So the problem wasn't the human at all?
No, the problem was that the building itself was failing. The infrastructure was breaking down and generating excessive, unnatural noise.
But proving the noise was intolerable was only half the battle, right? Because the Owners Corporation kept dismissing Dimitri's complaints as just a subjective overreaction.
Right. They kept saying, oh, it's not that bad.
Yeah. So to force their hand, Dimitri realized he couldn't just say, hey, it's really loud. He had to objectively prove that the noise was crossing a defined legal line.
Yeah,
he had to take this out of the realm of annoyance and into the realm of hard science.
And he was smart to do that. Subjective complaints will almost never win a legal battle against a well-funded strata corporation. You absolutely need empirical, undeniable data.
So what did he do?
Well, Dimitri hired James Severmenses, an acoustical consultant from Quakus Acoustics Pretty LTD. His job was to definitively map the acoustic reality of that bedroom.
And I love this part because Severmenses doesn't just show up with a smartphone app to see how loud the room is.
Oh, definitely not.
He brings an NT XL2 Type 1 precision spectrum analyzer. And the tribunal specifically notes this equipment is traceable to NADA calibration certification.
Which is a huge detail.
Yeah. For anyone unfamiliar, NADA is basically the Supreme Court of laboratory standards in Australia. If a NADA certified machine says a noise exists, it is practically scientific gospel.
Absolutely. So Severmenses sets up this highly sensitive gear in Dimitri's bedroom on an October evening in 2021. He measures the noise with the neighbor's shower completely off, and then measures it again with the shower running.
Which gives us the contrast we need.
Exactly. The baseline measurement is vital. When the shower is off, the background noise in Dimitri's bedroom hovers around a very quiet 28 to 29 decibels.
That sounds lovely.
It is. That is a deeply peaceful environment, exactly what a bedroom should be. But the moment the shower in Unit 41 is turned on, the noise level in Dimitri's bedroom spikes to 48 decibels.
Which sounds like just a number until you realize how decibels actually work. Because the decibel scale is logarithmic, not linear.
Right. People often forget that.
Yeah. A 10 decibel increase actually means the sound energy has multiplied to the point where the human ear perceives it as twice as loud. So a 20 decibel jump means the room is suddenly four times louder.
It's massive.
That 25 decibel jump at night is not some faint hum filtering through the drywall. It is a physical, inescapable intrusion into your personal space.
And to give those numbers legal weight, Severmenses didn't just stop there. He mapped them against official Environmental Protection Authority standards.
The EPA standards.
Yes. Back in the 1980s, the EPA conducted these extensive social surveys to establish human tolerance levels for noise. They found that any noise just 5 decibels above the background baseline is legally considered offensive by a reasonable person with normal hearing.
Wow. Just 5 decibels over baseline is the threshold for an offensive intrusion.
Yep, just 5 decibels. And Severmenses' report laid out the math clear as day. The shower noise exceeded that 5 decibel offensive criterion by 5 decibels during the daytime.
Okay, so offensive during the day.
During the evening, it exceeded it by 14 decibels. And during the nighttime period, when background noise drops and Dimitri is trying to sleep, the shower noise exceeded the offensive criterion by a massive 25 decibels.
That is just insane.
It really highlights the severity. This methodology is what makes the case a textbook example for apartment owners. Severmenses didn't just tell the tribunal the noise was irritating. He used an objective EPA standard for sleep disturbance to conclude that during the night, shower noise should be near inaudible to avoid disrupting sleep.
And a sustained 48 decibels is light years away from inaudible.
Exactly.
So even faced with hard, NADA-certified scientific proof that Dimitri was being deafened every night, the building management didn't offer a plumber. They offered a lawyer. Yeah. The Owners Corporation decided on a highly risky legal maneuver to just, you know, strike the scientific evidence from the record entirely.
It's a classic bureaucratic defense strategy. Mm-hmm. If you cannot argue the facts because the data is undeniably against you, well, you attack the procedure.
Right, attack the paperwork.
Exactly. At the hearing, the Owners Corporation was represented by their strata manager, Joel McGrath. Rather than bringing their own acoustic expert to counter the claims or explain the noise, McGrath simply attacked the Severmenci's report on procedural grounds.
Wait, so the strata manager looks at a mountain of highly calibrated acoustic data and essentially says, yeah, but the scientist didn't sign it with a pen, so we shouldn't have to fix the wall.
That is essentially what happened.
He literally tried to get it thrown out because the document lacked a physical signature. He also claimed it didn't strictly follow NCCATI Procedural Direction 3, which is a rule about how expert codes of conduct are acknowledged.
And he even argued the report didn't thoroughly list Severmenci's qualifications.
That is an incredibly bold and ultimately disastrous legal strategy when you haven't bothered to bring your own expert.
Oh, it completely backfired. The senior member presiding over the tribunal, P. French, absolutely dismantled that defense. French pointed out that under Section 38, Subsection 2 of the Civil and Administrative Tribunal Act, the tribunal is explicitly not bound by strict rules of evidence.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they are empowered to inquire into matters in whatever manner they see fit to ensure a fair and just hearing.
So French basically gave a masterclass on the difference between weight and admissibility. Just because a report is missing a signature doesn't mean the data disappears into thin air or becomes legally invisible.
Right, the judge can still read it.
Exactly. They just have to decide how much weight or trust to give it. And frankly, if the strata manager actually doubted the expert's qualifications or the authenticity of the data, they had every opportunity to formally challenge it before the hearing began.
Which they didn't do. The tribunal noted the complete failure of the Owners Corporation to mount a real defense. They failed to file a proper response disputing the report's authenticity. They failed to bring their own acoustic expert to offer an alternative theory.
They really just showed up empty-handed.
Pretty much. They didn't even request to cross-examine Mr. Severmenci's at the hearing.
Yeah.
You cannot just show up on the day of the trial, point at a missing signature, and expect a judge to ignore highly detailed, objective scientific data.
Especially when the report states clearly that the author is a member of the Australian Acoustical Society.
Exactly. But the strata manager had a secondary argument up his sleeve. And this one is genuinely staggering.
I love this part.
Mr. McGrath made a bare assertion to the tribunal that the noise transmission wasn't a defect in the common property at all. He claimed it was just a, quote, building feature.
A feature. Think about your own apartment walls right now listening to this. They literally tried to argue that because the loud pipes were built into the design, it was just a feature of living there.
And therefore, just a neighborly dispute they had no part in.
It's literally like a tech company releasing broken software and saying, oh, it's not a bug, it's a feature.
Exactly the same logic. And the tribunal rejected that entirely. Claiming an infrastructure failure is just a building feature without providing a single building standard or expert testimony to back it up is legally meaningless.
Thank goodness.
The tribunal explicitly stated that they do not accept that building features that permit offensive noise transmission in a communal living environment are not defective.
So the building management completely underestimated the burden of proof required to waive away Dimitri's claims. By redefining a flaw as a feature, they were hoping to avoid their core legal responsibilities.
Which brings us to the true core of the issue.
Yeah.
The absolute legal mandate. With the building's technical defenses totally dismantled, we have to look at what exactly a building owes you, the resident, under the law.
Okay, so let's get into the law itself.
This all hinges on a very specific piece of legislation. It's Section 106, Subsection 1 of the Strata Schemes Management Act of 2015.
And what does that say?
It states that an owner's corporation must properly maintain and keep, in a state of good and serviceable repair, the common property. To interpret what that actually means, the tribunal looked at major legal precedents, specifically cases known as SEWA and Gittins.
The language from the SEWA precedent is incredibly powerful because it defines what a strict duty actually means in this context.
Yes, the strict duty is key here.
It's like buying a new parachute, right? Or let's use a car. The dealership doesn't just have a duty to try and make the brakes work or use their best endeavors to check the brake pads. They have a strict, absolute duty to ensure the car stops when you press the pedal.
Right, it either works or it doesn't.
Exactly. If the brakes squeal loud enough to deafen you every time you use them, the car is legally broken. The tribunal said the exact same logic applies to the pipes in an apartment building.
And that strict duty to maintain is not an obligation to simply use reasonable care. As soon as a piece of common property falls out of condition and stops serving its intended purpose without causing harm, the duty is breached.
But the owner's corporation essentially wanted to argue, hey, the pipes are perfectly serviceable, water goes in one end and comes out the showerhead. There are no leaks, so our job is done.
Right. They viewed serviceability entirely as plumbing function. But the tribunal radically redefined what serviceable means in a shared living space.
How so?
They established that a necessary implication of supplying water is doing so without creating an intolerable byproduct. Because the pipes created offensive noise while delivering that water, they were legally classified as malfunctioning.
Wow. That interpretation is a massive shield for apartment owners. A pipe that doesn't leak can still be legally broken if it destroys your peace.
Absolutely. So knowing the law was on his side, Dimitri came to the tribunal not just with complaints, but with a highly specific, actionable solution. He presented a detailed quotation from an entity called Sound Block Solutions for exactly $10,255.
$10,000. And this was not a simple cosmetic fix, right?
Not at all. The sound block assessment noted that the noise was traveling through rigid construction, specifically a nib wall, which is a small projecting wall section. To actually stop the vibration, the proposal requires partial demolition of the brick party wall.
They have to literally tear open the brickwork.
Yes, they have to physically expose the buried pipes and wrap them in a material called sound lag.
What exactly is sound lag?
Sound lag is crucial here. It is typically a dense, heavy material, like mass-loaded vinyl. By wrapping the pipe in it, you decouple the pipe from the rigid brick. The mass-loaded vinyl absorbs the kinetic energy of the vibrating water before it can ever reach the masonry.
Oh, that makes total sense.
Right. And after applying the sound lag, the proposal called for installing a brand new barrier board wall system to further isolate the bedroom.
So it is a significant, highly invasive construction project. So naturally, the owner's corporation made one final desperate plea to the tribunal. They argued that this proposed work was simply far too invasive and disruptive to the building to be forced upon them.
And the tribunal's response to that plea is basically the legal equivalent of a mic drop.
I love a good legal mic drop.
Senior member French stated plainly that inconvenience does not relieve a building of its statutory duty. You have to maintain the common property, even if it causes significant disruption to fix it.
Basically saying, too bad, it's your job.
Exactly. If the owner's corporation had a less disruptive way to fix the offensive noise, they should have presented it. But they provided zero alternative solutions.
That left the tribunal with only one clear path forward. The law demands the common property be serviceable. The NEDA certified acoustic evidence proved it wasn't. And the owner's corporation had no valid defense and no alternative repair plan.
Checkmate.
Truly. So on March 6, 2023, the tribunal handed down its final orders. They legally forced the owner's corporation to execute the exact $10,255 sound block repair, and they put them on a strict ticking clock to have the work completely finished by April 3rd.
After years of noise, Dimitri finally won back his sanctuary. It is a profound victory for anyone navigating the complexities of high-density living.
It really is.
It fundamentally shifts the power dynamic back toward the resident when infrastructure fails. Building management cannot hide behind technicalities or claim a screaming pipe is just a feature of city living.
And that is the ultimate takeaway for you listening right now. If you live in a strata scheme, an apartment, or any shared building, you need to remember that the building management has a strict, uncompromising legal duty to maintain the common property.
They absolutely do.
If a pipe is screaming in your wall or a shared exhaust fan is violently vibrating your floorboards, you do not have to just live with it. The law expects that infrastructure to function without destroying your peace.
You know, as our cities grow denser, we are building apartments faster and often cheaper than ever before. This deep dive really leaves us with a critical question to ponder moving forward. In the rush to build the skylines of tomorrow, are we engineering a future where basic acoustic privacy becomes a luxury amenity rather than a fundamental right?
It's a haunting thought, really. We started by looking at an apartment building as a giant shared organism. And what this legal battle proves is that when one of those shared arteries starts failing, you don't just ignore it and hope the organism adapts to the pain. You demand that it heals.
Well said.
Thank you so much for joining us as we explored the hidden anatomy of our living spaces. Until next time, keep questioning what is behind your walls.